A football game played overseas and on Christmas Eve in, let's see, was it 1943, I believe, and it was in the middle of World War II, is what we're going to be talking about next. Larry Mueller here. The book, the author is with us, but the book is titled The Mosquito Bowl. And the author with us now, Buzz Bissinger, he is an American journalist and author best known for his nonfiction work on Friday Night Lights. He's won many awards, among them a Pulitzer Prize and the Livingston Award. So as we talk with Buzz, I hope you'll join in with your own questions. We can talk about the intersection between football and World War II. What do you want to know about the history of American football during that period? Fascinating period and a fascinating book as well. Hope you'll join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Buzz Bissinger, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Hey, well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, I tell you what, I really was enthralled by your book. What gave you the idea to write The Mosquito Bowl?
You know, I actually don't know. I was playing around on the internet, and I don't know what I was looking up. I guess at some point, for some reason, I looked up World War II and sports, and in doing so, you know, thumbed through several pages and then came to this thing called the Mosquito Bowl that had been briefly written about. And the more I read, the more I was enthralled. The Mosquito Bowl was a football game that was played between two regiments of the Marine Corps that were loaded with some of the greatest college players in the country. And I mean loaded. And it was played on December 24th of 1944 on the island of Guadalcanal. And I said, wait a second, a football game on the island of Guadalcanal in the middle of the Pacific, in the middle of the war? It just didn't compute. But the more I read, the more tantalized I was, the more I understood about the players, two of whom I read about at length were from the University of Wisconsin, actually.
Yeah. Yes.
The more intrigued I got. And so I said, let's see if I can get at this thing, because of the 65 who played in that game, 64 were no longer with us. And I should also just one more thing. What really intrigued me and got to me was of the 65 who played in the Mosquito Bowl on Guadalcanal, 15 were later killed several months later at Okinawa in the bloodiest fighting in the Pacific. So when I learned that, I just felt it was a really wrenching, dramatic, yet uplifting tale to be told about these Marines in World War II.
Yeah. And your family history intertwines with the story, especially with your father.
Yeah, and that was something I really didn't know about. I knew my dad had been a Marine. I knew he had been in Okinawa, but he really never talked about it. There'd be a few jokes here and there, but if the subject came up seriously, he had to leave the room and smoke a cigarette. As I was beginning research, you know, I'm looking up the records of all these players, all these Marines, and I said, well, I might as well find out something about him, you know, his rank and what regiment he was in and what battalion. So I got his muster rolls. They're easy to get. And we have the same name, Harry G. Bissinger. And I swear it was incredible. There's his name, my name. And he is actually in one of the regiments that I'm writing about. And for all I know, may have been at the game because there were 1,500 Marines at the game. And my father was the trifecta. He liked to gamble and they allowed gambling. He liked to drink beer and he liked to drink beer and he loved football. So he may well have been there, but it really did blow my mind. And was kind of the last hoop that made me decide I really want to do this book.
I love how you have organized your book, too, because you pick some, I guess you could call them main characters in the book, or real people. So we learn quite a bit of detail. And then when I saw, when I first picked up the book, I didn't realize that Dave Schreiner was was one of the key characters in the book. That intrigued me all the more because Dave Schreiner was a revered player at Wisconsin, All-American at Wisconsin. And so that sort of added to my interest, and Bob Bauman as well.
Exactly. You know, that it's very University of Wisconsin centric. I mean, Dave is very much a major character in the book. Some think he's the most interesting character, and as you probably know, was a two-time All-American and a true All-American at Wisconsin, was the captain of the 1942 team that was legendary at Wisconsin and just came within a hair of going undefeated before being upset by Iowa. I was lucky with Dave in that his family had given all sorts of letters and other material to the Wisconsin Historical Society. So when I read those, I said, I think I can make him come alive. And he also had a niece who was still living. He was a magnificent man. That's all I can say. And the tragedy of what happened to him is beyond belief. I mean, he was kind. He was friendly. He was self-effacing. He was very modest. He was shy. He adored his family, and his family adored him. He was from Lancaster in Wisconsin, had a fiance who he adored, and was everything you would want, both in a human being and a son and a fiance, a football player, and also a Marine. He was spectacular, and then Bob Bauman is also in it. And they were best friends. And, you know, they went through hell and high water together. I don't want to give it all away, but the circumstances of what happened to them at Okinawa is just wrenching. It's just tragic isn't the right word. It's absolutely wrenching, not only in terms of what happened to them, but their bravery of all these men, of everyone who served, their bravery, their willingness to do their duty without complaint. It really got to me emotionally. And believe it or not, as I wrote, I kept a little picture of Dave Schreiner next to me to remember this book is about, in many ways, memorializing these men who are gone to make sure we never forget.
Yeah, and it boy, that comes through in your writing, Buzz, for sure. Schreiner, just to spend another couple of minutes on him, he was, he came from a family that was fairly wealthy, I guess you could say, from Lancaster.
Right.
And he was one of these, I don't know, he was never quite satisfied. I think at one point you write about him writing 16 things down that he needed to improve on.
Well, it was, you know, here he was. He had just been named an All-American, I think, by the Associated Press. And when a reporter asked him about it, he said, what for? I haven't done anything. And then later that December, kind of a New Year's resolution list, he makes out this list of basically 16 things that are wrong with him. And this guy is perfect, and it was incredible as I read it. I mean, he's so hard on himself, from his posture to being nicer to women to doing this to doing that to studying harder. I mean, he was just relentlessly hard on himself, and I was really taken with that passage. He was never satisfied with what he did, and, you know, it was hard for him to take praise because he was always pushing himself. And as I say, he was a wonderful character in the book, and I was lucky to have gotten those letters because I, you know, the goal was to take several players and really make them come alive, because that's the key to any book. You've got to like the characters. You've got to care about them. And I had enough material to do that with him and another player named John McLowry, who had gone to Brown and played for the Giants, and, of course, Bob Bauman and George Murphy, who was a captain of Notre Dame, and he and Schreiner once played each other. And, you know, I had enough material, as I say. I wanted these guys to come alive. I wanted the reader to care about them, to turn the page to see what happens to them from their college lives to their beginning of their Marine lives to the first combat they see, and then into the, I pause because I just never know how to describe it, the absolute horror of Okinawa, which I think is a battle that many don't really know about and probably has been forgotten.
Yeah, and I definitely want to get into that battle. You do such a great job of describing that battle, and I definitely we want to talk with you about that. McLaughlin? Is that how his name was?
McLowry, John
McLowry. McLowry was an interesting guy to me, too, and maybe talk about him for a minute.
Well, McLowry was really a jack of all trades. He was a great football player. He played for his father, who was then a very famous football coach at Brown. He was a blocking back, which means all he did was beat the hell out of people. He was class president. He led the procession at commencement. you know, he was the all everything, but he also was a very, very gifted illustrator. And later in his life, after he became a football coach at Brown, and later in his life, you know, he drew paintings and drew art almost extensively. And it was just wonderful. And in the book, on the inside cover, is an illustration that he actually did of the jungle of Bougainville, where he was at. He was just a very, very gifted man, very perceptive, calm, a little bit older than many of the officers, and the kind of guy you want. He wasn't going to take unnecessary risk, but he was going to, you know, do his duty to his country and to his fellow Marines, whatever that was. And that was true of all of them, those who lived and the 15 who tragically died. They were willing to sacrifice their lives, make no mistake about it. And tragically, you know, 15 of them did lose their lives.
Yeah. He wanted to be a pilot, if I'm not mistaken. I think he flunked out as a pilot.
I think you're right. It was the only time I think he ever failed in his life. And he wanted to be in the Army Air Corps, and he got in. And he said, the minute I got in the plane, I pretty much knew there was no way I was going to be able to fly this thing. No way. And his flight instructor basically said, you know, John, I'm saving your life. I'm flunking you. You're not going to fly. And it was, in a sense, the best thing that ever happened to him. You know, I had a brother, younger brother, who was also a very gifted athlete. And he was in the Army Air Corps and was flying. And so there was a little bit of jealousy. But John would have crashed. I mean, he said, you know, I'm athletic, I'm strong on this, but he just didn't have the subtle touch that you need to be a pilot. So he did wash out and then join the Marines.
Oh, man. Our guest today, Buzz Bissinger, an American journalist, author, I think best known for his nonfiction work, Friday Night Lights, a fantastic book. He's also won many awards, including the Pulitzer Prize. And he's going to tell us about that Mosquito Bowl itself. And we're also going to zero in on what happened in Okinawa. And I want to talk with him as well about football and its and World War II and kind of the impact of football during that time period, because that to me was a really interesting part of his book as well. And we'll do all that. We're going to take a quick look at the news. We'll take a look at the weather, perhaps, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Buzz. Questions for him, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us, email address ideas@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about the book, The Mosquito Bowl. It chronicles a football game played in the middle of World War II. And the book is also about war and football. It's about World War II and especially the battle for Okinawa, which I had not read anything about, and which chronicles that battle in quite a bit of detail. It's a fascinating book. Buzz Bissinger is our guest. He's the American journalist and author who wrote the book. He's best known for his nonfiction work, Friday Night Lights, won many awards, among them a Pulitzer Prize and the Livingston Award. So he's a very good writer. And love to have you join in the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. And Ellen in Heartland has a question I think that relates and gets us off to a good start here in this segment. Ellen, go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. A comment first. Congratulations on the book. And because Mr. Buzz wrote the book about Mosquito Bowl, will his next project be a sting operation?
Well, that's it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, after you, sir.
I frankly don't know what my next project will be. I'm not very good at jumping from one project to the other. This took 5 years, and at the end, I felt like a punching bag. But something will come. I mean, I love doing the research, and I loved, love writing the book. There are a lot of different aspects to it, but I'm proud of what was accomplished.
And my question, please, is as a fifth generation veteran, how did you access military records and muster rolls?
You know, they're actually easy to find if you're just patient. Ancestry.com has all the muster rolls. Ancestry.com is amazing, actually. You'll find muster rolls there. You may find other little tidbits of material. Fold 3 also has a lot of military records, particularly of action reports of battles. Millions of records from World War II have been digitized, which really makes it a lot easier. And then I was able to access their actual military records from the warehouse in St. Louis, and was extremely lucky because there was a fire there in the 1970s that destroyed all the records of the Army. But fortunately, the Marine records are still intact.
Hmm. Alan, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Let's take a call from Jane in Elkhorn. Jane, hello.
Hello there.
Hello.
Nice to hear your program. I had a comment. I'm actually unloading groceries. I had a comment about my father, who was a pilot trainer in the newly formed Army Air Corps, and his younger brother, who deviled him to enlist far before he did. The younger brother enlisted in the Marine Corps and was at Okinawa.
Really?
And he said that, yes, he credited the Seabees, who were nearby, for actually keeping them from starving, sharing their food with them.
The Seabees were, and I think, very underrated. They were an absolutely amazing outfit. I mean, if a runway was bombed by the Japanese, they could have it up and going overnight. And there were so many skilled people there. They could build anything. They could fix anything. I'm not surprised that they shared their food with the Marines, because there was a scarcity of food at one point. And they were absolutely magnificent, particularly the Battle of Guadalcanal in 1942 and 43. Every night, Henderson Field would be bombed by the Japanese. Every night, the Seabees would go in and fix it, and planes would fly off again. They really were a magnificent outfit. And, you know, I thank your relatives for your service, for their service. It's a great thing.
Jane, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Then I think you write somewhere in the book that the Navy was credited with keeping football alive in 1943.
That's correct. I mean, the Navy had a very specific view of football, unlike the other services. The Navy truly believed that the single best source of combat training was football. And so they wanted their officers, as they were going through training, to play it. And there were some parallels. I think there can be dangers in comparing any sport to war, because there's nothing like war. But football teaches about discipline. It teaches about playing through pain. It teaches about teamwork. It teaches about setting a high standard, setting a high goal, and meeting that goal. It's about winning no matter what it takes. And they felt those qualities really did fit in with the type of qualities that you want in an officer. I just want to say, the Mosquito Bowl is really not a football book.
Right.
And there's very little about the game itself, which was intentional. It's called the Mosquito Bowl because every character that I write about is linked to the Mosquito Bowl. It's the glue that holds the story together. But I know some have felt, well, what about the game? Well, there's not much known about the game. Plus, it was 0-0. So it's not like there's a lot to write about exciting when it's a 0-0. A zero game. But, football is in it because Dave Schreiner and Bauman and others, the Navy started the V-12 program, officer training program, and you could go to college and also participate in extracurricular activities you know, i.e. football. So a lot of guys went that route and into the Marines because football players were attracted to the Marines, you know, because their own self-image, because of machoism, because of whatever, which is one of the reasons these two regiments in the heat of Guadalcanal had great football players.
Yeah, and the training, just thinking about the training, there, a lot of people, them didn't get a whole lot of training. I know Schreiner, his Paris Island training was what, 8 weeks?
I think it was 8 weeks, and then he got 90 days of officer training. They were desperate, desperate for officers, and, you know, 90 days was the best they could give, although ironically, the best place, if you wanted to keep playing football during World War II and not worry about the draft, the best place to go was West Point, which I found kind of incredible. Because West Point had a three-year matriculation rule, so they had their best teams ever in the war because the recruiting pitch was all over the country. Do you want to get drafted and go into combat, or would you like to play football? Well, I think the answer is pretty simple. I'd like to play football. And, they, you know, that was Blanchard, that was Davis, the Heisman Trophy winners. They were you know, remarkable, but they were insulated, which really, you know, upset a lot of the men who are overseas. You know, the attitude is, I'm getting my ass shot off, and you guys are playing football. But it was really MacArthur who felt that Army football was essential to the morale of the country. I don't know if that's true or not, but they did have magnificent teams because basically they were the only team in the country that could recruit.
And I think about Schreiner, who was studying to be a doctor, but then actually decided not to, and he wouldn't have had to tell his draft board.
Probably not. This was typical of Dave. He was pre-med, and you get an exemption when you're pre-med. But he was very candid, and he wrote to his parents. There was always suspicion that it was his mom who wanted him to be a doctor, and he said, I'm just not doing very well, and I want to switch majors. Well, the problem with switching majors is if you notify your draft board, that means you're now eligible for the draft. And his parents indicated, why don't you just wait, Dave? What's the rush? Just wait. And he said, no, that's not right. That's not fair. He did notify them. He didn't go off to war immediately. And by the way, Dave Schreiner was the type of guy, he has those, you know, Wisconsin farm boy, he has really great, solid Midwestern roots, a high sense of morality. He could have gotten a physical instructor job and stayed in the States. There's no question about that. I mean, I read letters where he was offered one because he was a huge star. Yeah. College football players were huge back then, much, much bigger than the pros, and David was the shiniest of the shining stars. And he could have stayed in the States, but he said, no, I want to serve my country, and I want to be a Marine. And that's the route that he decided to take.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, we might as well, you're right, exactly. You don't spend a whole lot of time on the game itself, but it was a game, maybe just to say how it came about. It was a game that attracted a lot of interest among the people in the service.
Well, the 6th Division of the Marine Corps was training on Guadalcanal. This would have been the fall of 1944, and they had been there for a while, several months in some cases, and they were getting bored. You know, the thing about Marines is they want to know. They want to know at some point, am I going to live or am I going to die? They don't want to dwell on it, because if you dwell on that, you really go inside your head. You get what they called the 1,000-yard stare. And they were always looking for ways to improve morale. So these two regiments, the 29th and the 4th, would argue back and forth over a few beers, who would have the better team if we played each other in football? There were three All-Americans among them. There were 7 captains from Brown to Notre Dame to California. There were 16 players who either were drafted and would be drafted into the pros. I mean, that's power.
Yeah.
And they argued, and then finally some guy, I think, said, well, we're Marines. We don't argue. We fight it out. So they decided to have a game. But the cool thing and the amazing thing, as close as they could get to a real game, they built goalposts. They made a regulation field out of the parade ground. They printed programs. It was broadcast over the Mosquito Network. There was a PA system. I mean, this was a real game. 1,500 Marines came and watched. And I think it was the last time they really were allowed to be boys and really do something that they absolutely adored and loved, which was football and a way of bringing a little piece of America 7,000 miles across the sea to this place that very few had ever heard of, which was Guadalcanal. And after that game, I think it was over in the sense they were men, even though they were always boys in my mind. They were men, they were training, and 4 months later, they were in the hell of Okinawa, where 15 of them killed. In 82 days, 250,000 people were killed at Okinawa, including American Marines and Navy and Army, roughly 60 to 100,000 Japanese. We'll never quite know, and about as many as 150 civilians, 150,000 civilians. So that's roughly 3,000 a day in 82 days. And when I read that, I couldn't imagine it. I knew it was a hard battle, but I had no idea how big the loss of life was. None.
And you write so eloquently and detailed about that. And Guadalcanal, that was, or I'm sorry, Okinawa, it served as, it was going to serve as the launching point for the first invasion of Japan.
That's right. It was close enough where you could get the bombers. They could go and come back. So it certainly has strategic significance. But I think, and there's some evidence to suggest this, we'll never quite know. The book doesn't really mention the atom bomb, except that I think Truman dropped it because there was no indications the Japanese were ever going to surrender. And I think he said, I'm not going to lose another American boy on foreign soil. And if this is the only way to compel the Japanese to surrender the use of this horrific weapon, I'm going to use it. And I think he was right, because the Japanese, who were tough and tenacious and savage to begin with, they would have been double all that when they're defending your own homeland. It's a whole different set of parameters. And as we know, after the bomb was dropped, the Japanese did officially surrender about a week later. So a lot of lives, were saved by, Truman dropping the bomb and realizing that there could have been as many as 250,000 casualties if we attacked the homeland. And that's a lot of people. As it was, the casualty rate at Okinawa was over 50%. And what these guys went through, as much as I've researched and written about it, I don't think we'll ever quite know. I think you have to be there. But the filth, the blood, the loss of men that they loved, I mean, you name it, they went through it. The book is graphic. It doesn't hold back, because I really want readers to see what war is not pretty. War is not movies. War is not sanitized. For too many men, war is death. That's what war is about, and you're trying to kill one another. But what was magnificent about these men, I describe them as ordinary men under extraordinary circumstances, and I think that's true. They served without question. They served with honor. They served with duty. They were willing to live or die, and I think it gives the book a lot of components. It's about service. It's about duty. It's about war, but it's also about love of your fellow Marine. It's a story about bravery, and although it is a story about men dying, I think there's an uplift in what they were willing to do and what they were willing to sacrifice that makes them, magnificent. And that's why we must remember them.
Yeah. I'm thinking, as you were talking, I was thinking about Bob Bauman, too, who was injured and in a hospital and requested. Well, go ahead and tell that story.
Well, Bob was injured early on in the campaign. Bob was a lieutenant. He was really, really well-liked. Bob was kind of laid back, which people liked. He had a good sense of humor. He loved beer. Schreiner was a little bit more uptight. Bauman got injured, and because he was a lieutenant, he was hospitalized in Guam, and I think the possibility existed that they would have sent him home. But he said, no, I want to keep fighting. I want to be back with my men. That's where I belong. I'm in the 29th Regiment. I need to be back on the line. And that's what he did. He basically just signed out of the hospital and went back into duty with harrowing repercussions. But that was true of all these guys. Many guys I wrote about got hurt, but, refused to take advantage of their rank and going home back to the States. They continually were going, you know, back into combat because that's the type of men, you know, that they were and that they represent. And the other thing, too, is that it was a great time in American life. It was. America was not perfect, as is pointed out in the book. No country is perfect. But this was a time in which we talk about making America great again. And America was great because there was complete unity. There was unity of purpose. Granted, it was because of a war. But right before the war, there was nothing but fighting in Congress. But everyone served. You know, women took over industry and did a magnificent job. African Americans served despite withering segregation. You know, on the line in combat, you had everyone, people of every socioeconomic stripe, whether you're poor, whether you're rich, whether you're from the East, whether you're from the Midwest. And that taught them about respecting one another, about getting to know each other, getting to know different cultures, losing preconceived notions. And, you know, there is no red state or blue state in the foxhole. There's only the guy next to you and the pact that you've made to do anything you can to save them. So despite the fact it was a war, it was also a magnificent time in America. And I'm hopeful, because we have to be hopeful, that we can do that again, because there were a lot of friction at first. You know, Southerners didn't really like the guys from Brooklyn, and the guys from Brooklyn didn't like anybody. But they got along and they learned to get along. And I think they got along. You know, when you're pushed together, you learn to get along. I think we need more of that. I sometimes think we need a year of mandatory service where we're mixing with people we don't know from every region of the country, because that's the only thing that teaches respect. And now we're just consumed, you know, really by hatred. But if that existed in World War II, I don't think we ever would have won. So that's another aspect of the book that I wanted to get across.
Yeah. And Schreiner, he fought all 81 days of that.
They fought 81 days. You know, I hate to give it away, but I will, because they fought 81 days in Okinawa. I'll just say it this way. Something terribly tragic happened on that day. And literally 12 hours after he was killed, I might as well say it, 12 hours after Dave Schreiner was killed in a silly mop-up patrol that was unnecessary, the Americans officially declared the cessation of the hostilities. And then the battle was over. And 12 hours before, Dave Schreiner was alive. And questions can be raised about, should he have gone out on that patrol? Was it night? It was dark. And you almost never, ever do that. And he was right down the home stretch. And this is what happened. And the tragedy was, you know, beyond belief, in the sense that there were a lot of condolence letters written. But what's cool about them was none of them mentioned football.
Yeah.
They mentioned what a terrific man he'd been. And look, all these men everywhere in the world who have served and died, they all deserve to have lives. You know, Dave Schreiner so deserved to have a life, to marry his fiance Odette, to have children, to maybe become a doctor, or he was thinking about becoming a farmer, you know, to do all the things we do in life and we take for granted. But he never, ever had that opportunity. He died at the age of 24, and it's so young. And, you know, it's not a waste in the sense he was serving his country, but it was a waste in the sense of a great young life that was snuffed out, like Bob Bauman. And like other players. I mean, that's the tragedy. These still were kids. You know, they still were innocent in a way. But in war, you lose your innocence, you know, very quickly, because it's about killing or being killed. And I try to, you know, get that across as sensitively. I can't pronounce the word. I try to get that across, but I do not hold back on the combat. People have to know. People have to know what it's really like. And that was, some say, oh, it's too much for me. And I get that, but I wouldn't have changed the word. People really, really have to know what war is really like and what people go through in defending the honor and integrity and safety of their country.
It is a riveting book, Buzz. And I felt like I learned a lot and appreciate a whole lot more about our country and about the people in it. And I want to thank you so much for writing it and for being with us today. Thank you so much, Buzz.
Well, thank you. You summed it up beautifully. That's exactly what I was trying to do. So I really appreciate what you said.
Buzz Bissinger, his book, a great book. It's titled The Mosquito Bowl, and it's about football in a little bit, but a whole lot more about life during the war and about the battle for Okinawa, which you, if you haven't read about it, you should. So thanks to Buzz, and thanks to you for listening. Tomorrow, our wildlife experts are back to talk about wildlife populations and environmentally friendly yard care. Stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.